This recording is produced from Open Reel Tapes, originally recorded for Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus, in 1973. This program forms part of the Langara College Reel History Project, which restores and preserves British Columbia's oral history. This project is funded in part by the British Columbia 2000 Millennium Arts and Heritage Fund, in partnership with Vancouver Public Library and Langara College. Copyright for this product is held by Langara College. It may not be reproduced in whole or in part in any form without permission from the copyright holder. The title of this recording is The 30s. The interviewer is Norman Penner. The interviewee is W.A. Pritchard.
The last time we were talking with you, Mr. Pritchard, we left you in the Stony Mountain Penitentiary. Which was really cool of us, but we had no other alternative. Now, we'd like to talk mainly about the 30s, but before we do, what was your political activity from the time, during the period from the time you were released from Stony Mountain Penitentiary until the 30s? Were you actively engaged in political activity?
Not too much. I was recuperating.
You were recuperating?
Yes.
Were you...
From jail, you know.
Yeah. Did you run in any provincial or federal elections?
Oh, yes. In the Nanaimo collection from north to south to Squamish, it took in the fishing town of Souk and East Souk and all the Gulf Islands, including Hope Bay.
What year was that?
Excluding Victoria, 1921.
And under whose auspices were you running?
Running the socialist candidate.
And were there other socialist candidates running?
Not there, no.
No, I mean,
this
was a provincial election or a federal?
Or a federal.
Or a federal election. And how many votes did you get?
Not enough. But I had a majority in Nanaimo, the provincial constituency of Nanaimo, that scared them. And Souk and East Souk, where I didn't visit, I got a big majority. Which might suggest that you can do better if you don't go to places. But I also got a good vote in Duncan.
What was the general vote for socialist candidates in BC at that time? How did the other socialist candidates in British Columbia do?
Oh, well, none were elected. None were elected.
No, but socialists like to count their votes, whether they're elected or not.
I know, but you really were a period in my life which was not to me that important. Three counted votes, so there's the barometer. Then I ran here in Westminster against, I forgot the year, it was about the same time. And this was at the minimum election. Later.
Well, it must have been 25. The next election after 21 was 25. Was your vote increased from 1921?
Well, it was a different constituency.
Yeah.
I have no way of measuring that.
And what would be the normal activity of the Socialist Party of Canada that you were a member of in those days?
Well, they were candidates.
So what?
Chiefly for propaganda purposes. You know.
And what did they do in between elections?
Oh, they issued their periodicals, they held meetings. After that, of course, I had to rest up some more. But I came out of the Winnipeg business weakened physically. And this deafness is a part of it.
The reason I'm asking this these questions of in prior to the 30s, because I want to establish at what point the Socialist Party of Canada decided to join the new party, the CCS.
Oh, I don't know that they did as a party. I had members that joined it as individuals.
And you were one of them.
The Socialist Party dissipated over the split, as I told you. Some of them were wanting to take the 21 points from Moscow and adopt them.
Well, you joined the... You were a foundation member of the CPS.
No. I was attached to them, but...
How do you mean attached to them?
Don't give me too much importance. I wasn't there at that.
But of course...
I came to it a little later.
What year? Because I have here that you were first president of the BC CCF Association.
What happened was there's a group organized, of which one was Mrs. Toombs and the professor of horticulture at UBC and a few other people.
Wallace Lefeu?
No. There was a small group still called itself the Socialist Party of Canada.
You weren't part of that group?
No. And they are the ones that joined, became the BC section of the CCF at the beginning. But the idea caught on and clubs sprang up all over the place. So these people organized a Reconstruction Party. And they came to me and bothered me. I didn't want to be bothered. Got me into it and I became president. But we held a convention in the Stanley Park.
Convention of what? Of the Reconstruction?
Of these people, yes. And what to do about it. They decided to organize a CCF clubs then.
Yes. And you joined them?
I was the president then.
Oh. So you were the president of the CCF club in British Columbia?
No, I was president of the Reconstruction Society. And just for a short time, get the thing going. When they decided to join the CCF, they ceased to be what they were originally. They became CCF clubs in the communities in which they lived.
Yes.
A series of clubs.
And what happened to the Reconstruction Society?
Well, when someone did up the ghost, you know what happens.
So
they decided to become CCF clubs. Now, if you are something and you decide to become something else,
yeah,
then you cease to be what you were, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Were you at the Regina Convention of the CCF?
Yes.
And you helped formulate the Regina Manifesto?
I think perhaps I wrote a preamble to something, to some section.
Uh-huh.
I think if you look at it, you'll find that.
Do you recall that convention at all?
Oh, yes. Not as vividly as I recall the strike, you know, or the trial.
How is that? It's early. It's later.
Hmm?
That's an interesting point. You remember the Winnipeg General Strike, which was 50 years ago, but you cannot remember as easily what was 40 years ago.
I can remember 2.5 years going to school.
Yes. Yes.
And that's a lot further back than
yes.
that. There
yes.
are things you yes. remember that strike your memory, you know.
Yes.
It would be altogether too awful to retain memories of everything, wouldn't it?
Well, the reason I'm coming at this is because the Regina Manifesto was the foundation program
yes.
of the CCF.
Yes.
And it had sections of it which were socialist in content.
Uh-huh.
Do you agree?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
In a terminal broad sense.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering to what extent that was done as a result of people like yourself who were socialists and who were joining this new party to make it a socialist party.
Well, there were quite a number of them. From BC.
Yes.
I had something to do with that. I think I was on one committee, a small committee, and that is why I drafted the preamble to maybe the manifesto itself. I'm not quite sure. If I could look at it, I could pick it up.
Well, of course, you know, did you consider the CCF at that time as a socialist party?
in the sense in which it was put forward,
yes.
As I told you this morning, I consider a socialist movement to be a much wider and deeper, more profound movement than any of the parties that have any kind of name that might contain the term socialist in them. To me, it is that movement taking place in society in which one, without being conscious of it, becomes moved or influenced by a changing ideology. We all have it.
Were you a member of the CCF at the time that you ran for Reeve of Burnaby?
Oh, no, because this came after I was out to Burnaby. That was 1932, and this was 33, wasn't it?
Yes. So, how did you come to run as Reeve of Burnaby? Were you active in the community there, or?
Oh, no. I had taken a little house on Capitol Hill, and it's still there. And got to know my neighbours. They came and talked. Some of them were interested in music, and we got talking about this and that, and they said, you come up to a ratepayers meeting. And I went there, and I asked a question or two. And there were people came around afterwards and said, you should run for the council. I said, oh, that's too much. Then the same people, together with others, came the next year. They said, look, we want you to run for Ward 4, the council. And as with other people, there are moments of flippancy, you know. And I just stopped off. No, I said, I have two good reasons. One is that the company wouldn't be good enough and the pay wouldn't be high enough. Well, next year, to get rid of the thing, I said I would run. And I would carry the place by 13 votes. If you're superstitious, that's ominous. But I carried it. But the people that urged me, I have two in mind right now, to run 2 years in succession, came out on the side of the other fellow who came from Vancouver. He must have had some property up there. He ran. And this was a crime with which I was charged, that I was interested in the money, which at that time I think was $25 a month. And if you had a broken down car, it wouldn't have paid for the gas to get to the municipal office. Because one had to come from North Burnaby to Renfrew Street, over to the south and along Kingsway to the hall, which was almost in New Westminster. And as this lady that's writing the book on Burnaby said, it's different now. I said, you are telling me? Well, she said, it's not a divided community now. I said, it was then. Anyone in the north that had to pay taxes had to go to the hall to pay them, and they had to make this circuitous trip. There were no roads north and south. There was a road that ran through from Vancouver called Douglas Road, but even Gilmore Avenue didn't reach it. None of these avenues going south went far enough. That was one of the first things I did, have them cut through the bush. We got through Spurling Avenue, we could get to the hall through Spurling Avenue. Furthermore, the next thing was to make an agreement with the banks that people could pay their taxes at the bank, like they do at telephone bills. Then we opened an office in the north.
A municipal office?
Huh?
A municipal office.
A branch office.
Yes.
Where they could transact business. This was a day's trip.
Yes.
These were the things we did.
So you were elected Reeve on your first try?
Yes. The first North Burnaby man to be Reeve.
So, in the campaign that got you elected, you must have received a lot of support in the campaign. People coming around to help you?
Oh, yes. That's all we had, too.
Yes. Who were they? Mostly trade unionists?
Our neighbors, yes, interested in generally working people.
Burnaby was a working
class. Burnaby at that time was what I would call a dormitory for New Westminster and Vancouver.
Were most of the people workers there?
They worked in the town area. Even policemen. Vancouver policemen lived in Burnaby.
What?
Then was the railroad shops, CP. In the south was the Canadian National, Fort Mann. The rest were loggers, fishermen, and minus. And these were our taxpayers.
And these are the people that supported you.
Well, yeah, for that war, yes. And as I say, I carried the... Oh, you're speaking about the election for Reeve.
Yes.
I beat a man that had been Reeve for many, many years. And many had tried to crack his nut. I didn't have a headquarters, but I had friends. And Watergate could tell you, you don't need a lot of money. What I did have were friends in gas stations and barbers in the barber shops. Now, these were the agents of propaganda, and you dropped your little seeds and you went along and they expanded on them. And if you could tell a good joke, that was the thing that counted.
So when you became Reeve...
Beat McLean, and that is policy, most people knew, and I named it a barrel full of gravel and a half-inch pipe. There wasn't a water main in Burnaby when I went in that was bigger than three-quarters of an inch. And when I left, they had a plan for water in which the mains were 4 inches and 6 inches with fire plugs properly placed. That's the plan I had to put through by guile.
And was it carried through?
Yes. It was carried through without being noticed. The people who voted for it didn't know they were voting for it. And I couldn't have done it any other way. And the way you go at it, you see, especially when you're on a council of 7, in which 4 are opposed to you on almost every measure, the only redress you have is to veto the stuff you don't like. And so it would kill the motion. Then let it hang for a while and get round it, like the Japanese got around the Americans over the surcharge. This is what happened. I suggested to the council that the engineers be instructed to prepare a plan to cover the next 20 years of Burnaby's water supply. All right. Now, they didn't adopt the plan, they just gave them instructions to prepare it. And then that plan was finished. I discovered that this could be registered and could not be challenged. It registered the same way, just a little law dug up. This could be registered in the same way as a piece of property. So I took it to Victoria, to the provincial secretary, and I laid it before him. I said, that is what we have for Burnaby as a possibility for the next 20 years. And he looked it over thoroughly, and I said, what do you think of it? He said, I think it's excellent. I said, would you certify that? He said, of course I would. I got him to put his seal on it, approve it, you see. That's it. I took it back to the council. And I reported what had happened. Now, it wasn't that if Bill Pritchard had done it, it was murder. But the provincial secretary of the provincial government, a seal on it, voted for it unanimously. And the very next month after that plan was adopted, the premiums on fire policies went down in Burnaby almost to the same rate as they were in the city of Vancouver. They didn't look far enough. These items meant something to people of Burnaby. I tried to get Hastings Street widened. You wouldn't know about that. But these people know. You went out of Vancouver, not east. And when you hit the boundary, it bottlenecked. We wished one half of the street paved, and the other half gravel, and a streetcar track up the middle. And I wanted to get it widened on that side to the same as Vancouver. We made all kinds of offers. They rejected it. They rejected it. 30 years later, they come to it when it cost them thousands and thousands of dollars more than it would have if they'd done it at that time. Now, there's many of these instances.
Well, did you have, in Burnaby when you were Reeve, a big problem about unemployment relief?
Oh, yes. In the Depression?
Yes.
What we had in Burnaby as taxpayers were workers.
Yeah.
The only income we had practically was our main income with the taxes. So now I'm in the position of having to provide relief out of the taxpayers' money that wasn't being paid in order that the taxpayers wouldn't die of starvation. Now, there's the problem in a nutshell.
How did you ever solve that problem?
I started the ball rolling to Mackenzie King. And that gentleman said that from all appearances, there was no evidence of any unemployment in Canada. The storm was breaking, see. Oh, of course, when Albie Bennett came in, there's another story, because this gentleman promised to cure unemployment in 3 months.
Yes.
And I charged him with it in Calgary.
Where, at a public meeting?
Yes.
Was he there?
A meeting of mayors and Reeves and the ministers of the Western Provinces. Of course he was there in the chair. And he gave them, in turn, he gave them all a lecture. The Reeve of some small burg in Saskatchewan gave it a picture of his position. The response from Bennett was, that's looking at the record, 35 years ago your municipality defaulted. And that was his whole argument against every one of them. Pushed them off. They sat there in awe, you know. Well, I was president of the BC Municipal Union, and when my name was called, I pointed out that I was representing not only Burnaby, but all those municipalities in British Columbia not here represented. And I said, Mr. Prime Minister, I'm perfectly willing to take my share of the verbal castigation that has been handed out this morning. He said to his secretary, any verbal castigation? You know, he blurted at him. He excused himself. Well, I said, I'll let that pass. And I'll allow that perhaps I don't quite understand the English language. Then I gave him the story. Municipality and town after town in British Columbia, and what we were faced with. Then I gave him a short picture of world conditions, to which he nodded. And the states. And this is a condition, Mr. Prime Minister, which is not of your doing and one over which you have no control. This is a matter of economics. We are now in that period of capitalist movement that is called depression, as against periods of prosperity. But I do recall a distinguished gentleman running for office some time ago who promised, if elected, he would see to it that unemployment was cured in 3 months. That date, Mr. Prime Minister, has long since gone by. Now, what I want to talk to you about is that unemployment has not been cured, and people in these municipalities are facing starvation, and some of them worse than that. And it's your responsibility to do something about it. Well, out of that grew then the arrangement whereby the federal government and the provincial government and the municipalities would take equal responsibility and share for relief. Fortunately, we had been able to float bonds at a premium covering water, same scheme I'm talking about, sewers and roads for Burnaby. And immediately, that's our section of the unemployment relief. The two governments provided for other work, unskilled workers, clearing lanes and preparing parks and whatever. So our first scheme covered so much of the two governments' programs. Now the municipalities had to carry all the overhead. We had to do all the bookkeeping, and we had to report in detail, in triplicate. And having done that, then we waited for some payment on the first scheme. And we didn't get any. We have to start the second scheme without any money from the government. Now a word comes from Victoria. This is bureaucracy. That after all this paperwork and this triplication, we are now informed that they require quintuplicates. So it all has to be gone over again, and back I go to Victoria, and we wait. And this time I started correspondence with Ottawa. Analyzed it, corresponded with Victoria, analyzed that, and I answered each according to what I figured. And making a long story short, I came out in public and announced that someone in Ottawa or in Victoria is lying. There's the documents. What transpired was the Dominion government sent its share of the funds to Victoria, and they held on to them. Now, the men who are digging ditches to put in sewers, and are putting in water, and are building roads, were skilled workers under contract with the municipality, to which I was a party the first time I was on the other side of the table in negotiations. I made that contract, and in that contract we set down 25 cents a day more for the sewer workers that had to go down deep ditches as against the men on top. 25 cents. That's another story. There came a time when our finances were shot, except for what we had in the sinking funds. So you pay these workers, most of them had been steady workers on the municipality, you pay them wages at the end of the week, but the other poor beggars who need it more, we haven't any money for you. What position would you take? The legal one or the moral one? That's what I put up to the government. And I was accused him over on a radio show in Victoria that I had dipped into the sinking funds. Dipped? I would have dived into the sinking fund. And then I told the lady from Burnaby the other day, if I was faced with the same situation at this time, I would do precisely the same thing. To see men and their children going hungry who had worked and there was no wages. And you know what happened? There were interested people, so interested that they gathered a committee together and they went down from door to door as though they were asking for contributions to the Red Cross or something. The 2 bits, 15 cents even, 50 cents. What's this for? We're getting a fund to bring Reef Pritchard into court. And they got it. And they brought him into court, along with the Chairman of Finance and the Treasurer. So, you take this also on a legal basis and argue legalities like that. We had a municipal lawyer, Macquarie. I think he became a judge later. He was a member for Westminster. So this was the stand he wanted to take. I fired him. We took him on from North Vancouver, a Liberal member he was. And so we told the story and pleaded guilty. Now, when you plead guilty to a charge in a court, a judge has only one thing to do, or at least two. You can either pass sentence then or there, or suspend. I wasn't given a suspended sentence, but the whole trial was placed in a state of suspension. And Judge Gregory said, and I got hell from the communists for this, because he said in court, this man saved Burnaby from revolution. You know, I shouldn't have done that. And he attacked me for it. But what I will do, he said, is leave this in suspension and I will send it to Victoria and request the government to legalize the acts of the Chairman of Finance and the Treasurer and the Reeve of Burnaby. At that time, we were almost at the end of our fifth project, and we still didn't have a penny from the provincial government for the first one. So they were after my scalp. We got over that.
What happened?
Oh, I had a talk with Tony about it. Then we had a meeting of Reeves and Mayors in Victoria, basically, before the cabinet. This is the time that boys were being chased from town to town and province to province and jumped into jail because they had no place to sleep, nothing to eat.
You mean this was the time of the Ottawa trek?
Prior to that. Uh-huh. And we laid the question before the provincial government. This government that was holding on to funds that didn't belong to them and were also holding on the funds that they were obligated to pay out on their share of relief. I don't know. Well, if a little municipality was treated the same.
It was the
same.
Yeah.
But at that meeting, we listened to a rather pious discourse from a cabinet minister by the name of Howe, who drew the idyllic picture of his mother making candles out of beef tallow, of spinning the yarn and making their clothes and so on. He said, why don't these, the lakes are full of fish and the rivers are full of fish, and what? Well, I pointed out quietly that in the first place, to go fishing, you need a license. None of these boys had a dollar. And it was certain that the kind of yarn that the Honourable Minister's mother spun in the early days was a different kind of yarn that he was spinning now. And that's what I was interested in. Unraveled it. Well, then along came the friend Gideon Robertson. He comes into the picture, say.
Oh, yeah.
And he sat there with the cabinet. He was the man that stopped the relief one day. He sent a man down from Ottawa. I was in Victoria that day. I down came the orders, all relief work stops in Burnaby. And I came home before supper, 6 o'clock at night, off the boat. And everybody in a panic. So I told some of the boys, get hold of the veterans hall there and we'll have a meeting. And I held a meeting. And I declared to the world at large they could send what they liked from Ottawa. The men would go to work the next day and relief would be carried on. It was. But in this meeting at Victoria, Senator Robertson's charge was, and this is why they stopped the relief work in Burnaby, that I was paying 25 cents a day more than the rate set for relief work by the government. You get it? That's what they put in. So I asked the Honourable Senator, and I reminded him that he had been Minister of Labour, and I told him the 25 cents was paid to men under a contract between employer and employee, that is to say the municipality and municipal workers. And I asked him, as a representative of Labour, what is his intention or wish that I should break a contract between employer and employee that had been peacefully negotiated? That was 25. Then they brought up other things. But I was running away with money. We were paying more for a truck to cut, you know, they had all kinds of trucks on about all construction. More than they were paying, the provincial government paying for other relief. So we had that meeting with Ralph Bruin. And I went with all the records. Of course we're paying more for a truck. Why shouldn't we? I asked Ralph Bruin. He says, well, you can't do that. Must be doing it. Well, I said, how much do you pay for a truck? So he told us, this is what we are paying for a truck, so much more, eh? Yes, and that's what we're against. And when you hire a truck, what else do you do? He said, what do you mean? Well, I said, you hire a truck and a driver at so much. Do you buy the gas and the oil? No. Listen, mister, I don't care what you do in Victoria, but no one comes into Burnaby using a Burnaby municipal truck able to get gasoline and oil on municipal funds. When we hire a truck, we hire a truck on the basis of the driver, the truck, and the gas and oil and all the rest of it. And we were paying less than they were. All along the line of type fire. So that I went to court there, and that was the top time. You know, this is the amusing thing, and a degree of satisfaction that some act of yours, which technically is illegal, should be ratified by an act of parliament. I don't know what class that puts you in. But they never did it. It's not been done till this day. And their last words to me in the cabinet meeting was that they had received the request from Justice Gregory and they were willing to do it, provided. Yes, I said, provided what? that I would pay the expenses of the people who brought the action against me. I get mad at times, and sometimes I say something I would rather not say in polite company, but I can say it here because I said it there. I said, Mr. Premier and gentlemen, this is my word to you. Also the word you can pass on to them. Please go to hell. And I picked up my bag and I walked out, and that's the last time they saw me. Now, that's the story of it. And that is where the commissioner came in. The government didn't put him in. I invited him in by means of giving instructions to turn down the first coupon holder that came in to collect on the bond. It was $25 something.
Did you know of any families in Burnaby that lost their homes due to mortgage foreclosure or tax sale?
No. I don't know of any.
Neither of
them. I know that, you see, you've got to do with legal question. We had to take houses in default payment. That's the law.
Yes.
All right. Well, I, the treasurer, was smart, hard on ball. The auction will be held. Yet again, the commies were in with their stuff, demonstrations. Do this, do that, do the other. They weren't going to see these people turn down their houses. Well, what we did, the lot is put up for auction. It was bid in right away by the municipality. Parcel after parcel, bid in by the municipality. And those people in those houses were put in there by the municipality and kept there. They were evicted.
And were you at the time of the onto Ottawa trek?
Oh, no. That was in what year?
35.
No. No.
When did
I finished in 32.
In 32.
Yes. But I did go to Winnipeg in 32 to the Dominion Municipal Convention. And there were some great papers on finance and engineering and water. I was tail end. I thought, well, you know, I'd be like biscuit at the end of a meal. And I gave a talk on unemployment. And they not only stopped going out, they started to come back in. And the place was filled. That went over the radio, even while I was speaking. I think called the Grain Growers, they had a radio.
Yeah,
yeah.
Gringo's guide.
When I went out the door, Bob Russell is there. He says, Bill, what have you been doing now? I said, what's the matter now? He says, you've got a speech all over town. Yeah? Is it the wires? Well, this I dealt with the question as I saw it as a world problem of a system that is where you have a production in which profit is a motive and in which workers are exploited. And the goods they produce cannot be bought back up with the wages they get. That's simple. This was my argument. And of course, I was paid the tribute of having given an excellent address, but they didn't think it possible.
What was possible?
My ideas.
Well, did you put forward some proposals?
Yes. The unemployment could not be permanently cured under a price system.
Oh, I see.
In which goods are produced for a world market in competition with various groups. You're coming into that period now, head on.
So you did.
And I told them that I understood their non-acceptance of my ideas from the very social consequences of my ideas being. Yeah? And this, then Russell asked me if I'd like to see Andrews.
Yeah.
Remember? I said, I wouldn't mind. Now, I'm not itching at all, but if you want to see him, oh, come on, Bill. He said, come on. So we went up to Andrews' office, and he came out. Bob must have been doing some business of some sort with him. That time.
Yes, well, probably because just to, for the purposes of this tape, we'll say that A.J. Andrews is the man you're speaking about. This is by way of a footnote. And is the Crown Prosecutor in the trial in which you were convicted in the Winnipeg General Strike.
That's right.
And Bob Russell was one of the strike leaders who was sentenced along with you.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
Bob Russell at that point was the secretary of the Street Rail Women's Union in Winnipeg and head of the OBU Council.
Yeah.
So probably in that capacity, he had something to do with Andrews. Also, they were negotiating for the bakery workers.
I went in there with him, and the secretary went and told him that somebody there. He had a client in the office, and he came out and says, "Well, Bob, what can I do today?" Bob said, "I'm an old friend of yours here." He looked at me, didn't know me. He said, "From Vancouver. Remember Pritchard?" Andrews Logan. Now, in court, he was gray-haired. But these many years later, he had a chestnut brown. So it went the other way around.
That made him younger.
And he said, oh, she's angry. Well, he said. Next thing he said, "My brother Bert has been in to tell me that you made a remarkable speech at the municipal convention." Bert was an alderman then, and he was a delegate for Winnipeg. Well, I said, "I made a speech. I don't know about remarkable." Well, he said, "It's another speech, isn't it?" I said, "Yes." But he said he was quite impressed with it. "Come on in." So he went in, and he got to the other fellow, and he started chatting. And he wanted to know what this and that, municipal affairs, whatever. And he figured that what I was doing now, at that time, was infinitely better than what he thought I had been doing at a previous time. But then he came to the conditions in the country, in the world. He wanted to talk about them. And it's pretty terrible. He says, "Richard, now, what should we do about it? What do you propose?" I said, "Just a minute, mister. Just a minute. I'm not going to give an opinion to a gentleman who helped to send me, and did send me to jail, for giving those kind of opinions that you're asking for now." And he says, "God damn it, you've not changed a bit." That was Alfie.
Were you...
The man that got under my skin, it was Isaac. Pitlayo.
He had also been a Crown attorney at trials, didn't he?
Oh, yes. He and Sweetman and Corwin and...
And Andrews.
And then they had a younger attorney who was... a Tyro, I guess. He's studying in the Andrews office. Named Goldstein. And he was very dual-looking. And when he whispered, his voice was so beautifully basso profundo, it shook the table almost. And at this time, I was given the privilege or the right to take exhibits to the jury and point out in contradistinction to the Crown where they had pointed out other things. And I talked to the jury quietly, and this rumble came through. Was disturbing. And any chance to break the monotony and talk to the judge, I grabbed it. And I said, "My lord, it's quite difficult for me to undertake this task and be disturbed by the..." What was the term I put in? Anyway, the thundering. I ducked on him there. With Mr. Goldstein. So you questioned Mr. Goldstein that he had to whisper to do it quieter. And he said, "I wouldn't let it bother you too much, Richard. I wouldn't let it disturb you." This was Metcalf. I said, "No, my lord, I don't think that I am disturbed. And like the illustrious party, I can say, I always know that I am travelling whenever I hear the dogs bark." So that after all.
Did you want to ask the question?
Are you through?
No.
I want to come back to Burnaby in a minute.
Yeah.
assistance from the government?
No.
What about other municipalities? Were they having the same
problem? I don't know.
You don't know about that?
I don't know their case.
But
no, no.
Was that
I know, North Vancouver municipality went into the commissionership and they went all through the province.
So by 19, that was mid-1932?
32.
Still no money
when
has come through?
I stepped out. They pleaded with me to stay until the end of the term. So what I did say to the government was, I do my best to do the job if I have the tools. And the arrangement is that you have the tools and you're hanging on to them. All we were looking for them was to pay their share. We already had the burden of overhead and the rest of it. That was enough.
So Burnaby didn't get a commissioner because it was bankrupt. It was just because you asked for it.
I asked for it indirectly by refusing payment. It was due on a bond, on a Burnaby bond. We defaulted on a bond for $25. We brought in the commissioner. The government didn't want to do it. They wanted me to hang on and then see what happened. See, that way we'd face another election. What they would have done then, I don't know. But I pulled the rug from under them. I said, that's it. I made a little talk to the municipal employees in the hall and told them why, and the council. That was it.
Did you remain living in Burnaby?
I've been accused of running the municipality into a commissionership, into bankruptcy. Yeah, that's how it happened.
So how long did you stay in Burnaby after that? How long did you live in Burnaby after
until
that?
Until 1938. Yeah. And when I got out of office, all the stipend in those days was $2,000 only. Of which was quite a lot of expenses running up and down on municipal business. I still had coming to me 50% of that. And all I asked for was the treasury, cover my taxes, charge it to that account. And it was a long time before I got the residue.
Were you still chairman of the BC Union of Municipalities at that stage?
Yes.
And so you retained that job? Or you had to leave? You kept it.
And I was taken to the next meeting of the municipal union after I was out of office as a guest and given a nice case of pipes. And I've lasted longer than the pipe.